The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. This is Kelly Bidlin, everybody.
Hey.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
I'm great. It is the middle of June, and there is too much to talk about.
That's right.
Too much.
Savor it.
You're absolutely right. It's 3 weeks from now.
Yeah, they're going to be Mondays. We roll in here like, what are we talking about?
What are we doing? On the show today, Matt Grissom talked college baseball with us. We'll, of course, talk NBA Finals as well. On the show with Raheem Palmer from The Ringer. Hey, Raheem's on the show today. Wes Reynolds, co-host of Long Shots. We'll talk U.S. Open with him, his Indiana Pacers after they, can I use the word gacked? They gacked the spread for sure. They gacked the game too, maybe. Maybe that's harsh. Anyway, maybe they gacked the whole thing on Friday night. We'll talk to Wes about the Pacers. And then Paul Sporer on baseball a little later on because obviously massive, I don't want to even say a massive trade, a heist in baseball took place. Let's do a little sports talk radio at some point in the show and compare the basketball trade to the baseball trade yesterday.
Okay.
Which was worse? That'll be the question. And by the way, which of the two has betting implications? I'm talking about Rafael Devers going to the Giants in baseball, which is massive for those of us who are Giants fans. And then, of course, the Desmond Bane trade in the NBA. We'll get to both of those, but we got to start with golf, where J.J. Spawn, we pick up where we left off on Friday. Well, we were on air it was Thursday morning when it first started, I guess. But J.J. Spawn was in the lead both of those mornings. He hadn't teed off yet on Friday. He was at 4 under at the time. Then, of course, a roller coaster of a weekend, including then starting yesterday where Spawn, he has a 5 on the first 5 holes of the round yesterday at Oakmont. He bogeys 5 of the first 6 holes to fall at that point to 2 over par. And it looked like when you have that run of holes, 5 or 6 in a row there at the beginning of the round, you figure you can bounce back from that. And the answer is yes, he does. And he wins the United States Open as a pre-flop anywhere, depending on where you got this. If you are one of the human beings who got this, I don't know how many did, but pre-flop anywhere from between 120 to 1 to 150 to 1 to win this tournament. He wins his first major. He does so by being the only person under par in the end, 1 under. You know how that went on the 18th hole. It took a 64.5-foot putt to get under par, but he does so 2-stroke lead over Robert McIntyre, who finished 1 over, and then a 3-stroke lead over Victor Hovland, who sort of didn't have himself a day yesterday, sort of was choppy throughout his day. It was a fourth round, a final round that was interrupted by a monsoon at Oakmont. But really, the greatness for Spawn began on the 12th hole, where he sunk a 40-foot birdie putt to get to 1 over par and 1 back. Then he had a great tee shot on 13. He had to settle for par there. But at 14, while this is going on, Sam Burns, no one was affected more by the weather than Sam Burns was. Burns lipped a par putt at 12. Then at 14, Spawn sinks a birdie putt to take the lead at even. But at 15, he drived it into the slop, hit a horrible second shot. He ended up bogeying 14. But at 14, did he end up? Yeah, he ends up bogeying 14, and then he birdies 15. He ends up birding 17, which is really the moment of the tournament, was when McIntyre got to 1 over par at 17. He ends up parring 18 to finish 1 over, leader in the clubhouse, if you will. But at 17, there he is, J.J. Spawn on the tee, needing the drive of his life, and boy, did he get it. He drives the green, has an eagle putt, misses that, but makes the short birdie putt. And then at 18, of course, the 64-foot, 5-inch putt, where he needed a 2-putt, right, to win the tournament. That was the situation. He did a 2-putt to win the tournament because McIntyre's in the clubhouse waiting 1 over. Hatton had already, hacked up the 18th hole, so he wasn't going to get there. But instead of getting the 2-putt, he makes the putt. And you could almost see it, Kelly, on the face of, you saw them in action. Hatton being interviewed at the moment, who was upset with himself after what he did on 18 down the stretch. He goes, unbelievable. watching that. And then McIntyre is waiting for him in the clubhouse to see if we're going to have a playoff tomorrow, today, meaning tomorrow, yesterday. Just has to clap when he sinks the putt, when J.J. Spaun sinks the putt. And what an absolutely spectacular final round of the U.S. Open. You did not have J.J., I assume.
No, I did not. Yeah. I'm still waiting for that first text message or tweet, too, with anybody with an outright ticket on J.J. Spaun. You know, we talked about it, though, on Friday. It was the differences between J.J. Spaun and some of those other no-names at the top of the leaderboard. Good for Spaun. He's a good player. He's been on the PGA Tour for a little while now. He's had some good finishes this year, and this is by far his best and one that will live on in his memory forever. That's for sure.
For sure. Wes Reynolds will have more to say about this. Let me just ask you this, because my buddy Tommy in D.C. texted this, and he's a casual golf fan. We talked about, and I've talked about many times, I love the U.S. Open. I love carnage on a golf course. That is what the U.S. Open is supposed to be, because golf has the increase of tournaments where someone wins 20 under par or better has increased over the years, right? Like, it's definitely like a thing now that's not an anomaly. So I wait for the U.S. Open. And this one, obviously, with the weather, you know, it didn't, the rain didn't make it any easier on guys. You had, you know, Burns was like, do I have to shoot this? If you're going to stop playing, I don't want to hit this ball. And it really affected him. Scheffler had a moment where he's like, if you're going to stop playing, I don't want to hit this ball. And it really affected guys. By the way, I do think that if it went to a fifth round or a sixth round, if golf was a five round or six round event, Scottie Scheffler would have won this at four over par. Everybody would have fallen back to him.
Yeah, Scheffler and Rahm sitting right there. Yeah, for sure. I mean, Rahm was hot on Sunday as well.
Scheffler and Rahm, 4 over T7. You won't see that very often.
Yeah.
But my buddy Tommy, yeah, he goes, have you ever seen more golfers mad at the course in one round of golf? And I think his implication was, like, is this good? And my thing was, I get it, but I still love it.
So it's really tough, because I think, first of all, VSiN.com, I was chuckling this morning reading the post-tournament thoughts that were up there from Matt Eumanns and Matt Brown, because from a betting standpoint, I think it's very, very difficult when you get a tournament that's set up like this. And it is just, the course is so difficult that it starts to feel like you're throwing darts at what golfers are going to survive.
I completely felt that way.
Now, it is very hard for me to sit here, though, Gil, because we've talked about this a lot. You know how I feel about all the birdie fests, too. There's too many of them. So it is a little hypocritical of me and some of us to sit here and say, well, we can't have this, but I don't want this either. So, I mean, I think overall, the PGA Tour and golf and the majors need to just get closer to the middle. I don't really want to watch that for a U.S. Open. I know we like the tough tests of the U.S. Open, but you can have tough tests at U.S. Opens where you've had more than one guy under par. You know what I mean? We can have a winning score at 5, 6, 7 under in a more playable course that doesn't require so much, I think, luck out of some of these guys. There's that, but it is what it is. Look, it was not a winning tournament for me. I think it was a tournament I'm a bit upset with myself about. And look, I actually got bailed out. I thought it was going to be a really ugly tournament. Rahm sneaking into backdooring a top 10 finish for me, and Xander finishing top 20 were huge for me. Yeah. Still a small losing tournament this week. But, every week when I go handicap golf, what I try to do afterwards is make notes, right, about the courses, about the tournaments, for when I circle back in years later, and then especially the next year, is there anything I'm forgetting, right? And the majors, outside of the Masters, it's tough to do too much of that with, because you have a rotation of courses. Now, with the U.S. Open, though, the one I'm mad at myself with is the U.S. Open has become this now. It's become pure carnage. We want pure carnage. That's what they give us every time that we play this, basically every year now. And it's, look, I think I didn't emphasize enough last week on long shots who were on this show. Dial back your betting size. It's fine to have bets going, but you need to dial back how much you're betting, because it is just becomes chaos almost every year at this point. It's going to be the same thing next year as well. I think that's big. I bet one missed the cut parlay. Should have bet more of those. Like, this is the tournament that you bet these at because of the tough conditions. And I only bet one. I should have bet, you know, different iterations of 2, 3, 4. So I'm a little upset with myself. It was not the best bet tournament of the year for me. I think the handicapping was fine, because I don't think there's much you can take away from this going forward. We have a signature event.
Agree.
This week with the Travelers Championship. And guess what? The odds makers aren't taking much away from this tournament, because the top of the odds boards sure looks a whole lot like it's looked like in weeks past before this tournament. So
a tournament where Rory McIlroy shot 7 over and gets a T20.
Yeah. I mean,
it's amazing. No, I do think within what you were saying there is the finest point of all of this, which is this was, from a betting standpoint, right? All the, you know, happiness for JJ Spawn and anybody who might have had him in the world, just from a fan standpoint, good for him. He wins his first major. But from a betting standpoint, this was an exercise distilled. This was an exercise in discipline.
Yeah.
This is the biggest event on a day where there was no NBA and there was no NHL and baseball was just doing its normal thing on any given day, besides the trade, obviously. This was front and center, the only thing going pretty much, right? Besides baseball and WNBA. But you get the idea. And so your whole thing was, okay, I mean, I have to make a bet on this, right? But if you were really truthful with yourself, was there any way to have any conviction on any one of these guys over the rest of the field?
No, because even the final round, Gil, even the final, like, I admittedly, and like, I didn't bet these guys. I bet Victor Hovland live top 10 after the first round. We talked about that on Friday. Sam Burns was a top 10 rated guy in my model this week. I stayed away from him. Okay, Burns would have made sense. Victor Hovland, top 15 in my model this week. Okay, maybe it would have made sense if those two got home. But in the end, no, it's JJ Spawn. And it's just it's not an outright ticket that I would have ever considered. I did not bet, and I have not seen many people making victory laps this morning about it.
Was still awesome to watch, though.
It was awesome to watch. Yeah. It was awesome to watch. And I was a lot happier when I did my final calculations this morning, Gil, that I didn't lose as much as I thought.
I can't believe they played through at one point.
I can't believe it got done. Yeah. I can't believe we're sitting here today not talking about golf still being played today.
Let's compare a trade, NBA versus MLB, and the betting implications of them, if there are, for both next.
VSiN, the sports betting network.
Want to make smarter football bets this season? Start with VSiN Pro. For a limited time, grab our football special at the early bird rate of just $175, giving you full access from now through the Super Bowl. That includes our NFL betting guide, the ultimate playbook with team breakdowns, power ratings, and season-long best bets. You also get a daily best bets email from our expert hosts and guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, live and on-demand shows via the VSiN Watch app, deep analytics and betting tools on VSiN.com. Don't miss this early bird deal. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe to lock in your early bird football special for just $175. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback from everybody. Let's see here. Brian Schaefer, tomato, tomato, Devers, Devers. The Giants stole that trade. Yes, we'll get to this. We'll get to this momentarily. Let's see. Devers was Ronald Reagan had a cabinet member with the last name Devers. That's where that came from, by the way. You remember
that's
that? You remember that, Kelly?
Where that came from? What were you thinking about that?
No,
know,
but they spelled the same way. Michael Mish, does you lose CA have a prayer tonight? Please ask Matt Grissom. I will. Absolutely will. Tim Bowers, I believe it's pronounced that way, says, even when you guys don't make official picks, you are still informative, such as Friday when you were discussing JJ Spawn being in the lead when Kelly said, or we talked about this yesterday, Kelly, when Kelly said that Golf Hardos knew he was a capable player, I decided to bet him at 9-1 to win.
Good
for you.
Nice.
That was, you compared him to, at the time, it was Spawn and Lawrence at the top of the leaderboard, and you were saying Spawn's actually legit, Lawrence is not.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was the expect guys that could hang around versus guys there's no way the hell hang around. And actually, I tip of the cap to Lawrence. He hung around for a lot longer than I thought he was going to. Can I go just from this VSiN.com article?
Please. Yeah,
this is for everybody out there that wants to say we don't talk about our losing weeks, right? Or our losers.
That's right.
I had a losing week. Okay. Matt Youmans. Worst career betting performance in a golf major, and there's no close second. Okay. Matt Brown.
Yeah.
My biggest losing tournament in 3 years. Okay. This is how tough it was for golf bettors out there. So it was rough. This was hard as hell.
And
to
it makes sense because the golf was taken out of it, if you will.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Just to a large degree. I'm just looking at my like log because I did a log starting at like the 12th hole, and it's just so funny the carnage of it. I mean, just the one highlight at 15, Burns tries to get an official to give him relief, denied. He then tries to get more relief, denied again. He then hooks it into the rough and duffs another one 2 feet in front of him.
Hit it out of a puddle. What do we do?
It's just so bad. Then chips past the hole, eventually double bogeys. At that point, he was 5 over since the restart. God, him and Scott, just they could not handle that.
I was wondering, I texted you this, I was wondering if the rain was going to slow down these lightning fast greens, and I was wondering if that was going to help the guys score at the end, but it really didn't, and Burns was the most affected by it. Burns, one of the best putters on the PGA Tour. It was pretty clear that the rain-logged course threw him off his game.
Jonathan Call, is Kelly Bidlin a long-lost brother of Tyrrell Hatton? Unbelievable.
I have heard that one before.
Such a great reaction.
I love Tyrrell Hatton. It's okay. Remember, there's a big difference, Gil, between the Jordan Spieths of the world and the Tyrrell Hatton and Brooks Koepkas. If you get furious at golf, I love that because that we can all relate to that. Whiny, complainy Jordan Spieth, on the other hand, though, I can't. I just want him to shut up.
When Spieth was scolding his putter on 18, I thought you were going to run out onto the green and tackle him.
I'm really afraid of ever being near him at a live PGA Tour event.
Let me just read this one. This is from Kyle Porturns, who says, JJ Spawn said he started today going to the CVS at 3 a.m. because his daughter was throwing up, ended up winning the U.S. Open on Father's Day. Maybe the most dad life Sunday of all time.
How cool of a story is that?
That's awesome. That's awesome. Great. Okay, two huge trades yesterday, and I want to ask the sports talk radio question of which was worse. I have my answer, but I just think because they both happened on the same day, because for some people, when they first were reported, you were like, this can't be real. The first one was the NBA trade that happened in the morning, where the Grizzlies traded Desmond Bane to the Orlando Magic for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Cole Anthony, 4 unprotected first-round picks, and 1 first-round pick swap. Now, I get it from the Magic standpoint. If you believe Desmond Bane added to Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner, and Jalen Suggs puts you in a true Eastern Conference, top-of-conference conversation. Like, if you believe that, okay, I get it. However, when did Desmond Bane become Kevin Durant or pick your NBA superstar? Let me just say this again. Desmond Bane forget KCP and Cole Anthony, 4 unprotected first round picks, 1 first round pick swap Sunday. And you can sit there and say, well, maybe those picks won't be that high. They won't be lottery picks. I don't care. Still, unless you think this is catapulting you to the top of the conference, what in the world was that? That's the first thing. That's trade number one. But trade number two, which I think is the winner, but I think I do have to ask the question, which is worse? The Giants acquire Rafael Devers from the Boston Red Sox, who, of course, was available not because of anything on the field, but because when the Red Sox acquired Alex Bregman, Devers was like, wait a minute, you signed me to be a third base. I'm not leaving third base. And then, like, you probably should leave third base. And finally, he acquiesced. He relented. He's like, all right, fine, I'll be a DH. I don't want to be a DH, but I'll be a DH. And then when they had injuries at first base, they're like, oh, you got to play first base for us. He's like, wait a minute, now you told me not to have my glove anymore. I don't want to play first base. Anyway, the owner went to see him in Kansas City, and apparently Devers didn't respond to him. So it was a whole thing. And they finally, this was in the works for a while now, we found out, but the Giants acquire Rafael Devers for Jordan Hicks, Kyle Harrison, and then also James Tibbs and Jose Bayo. But Hicks and Harrison, literally, if you look at the Giants' stats for pitchers, the bottom two ERAs are Harrison and Hicks. Harrison, who I never loved as a Giants fan, and Hicks, who could never really find his place as either a starter or a closer, you know, or anything in the bullpen for the Giants. I had high hopes for Hicks, but it never really worked out with them. And so it was just really they acquired Devers for a poo-poo platter is what it ends up being. And so you get an elite offensive player in Devers in a sport, Kelly, where offense is so down that the scarcity of elite offensive players is such that you have to make this deal. This is Buster Posey's first great deal here. So the Giants now, they get themselves the elite offensive player. They give up nothing for him. I love that the Giants, who were only one game behind the Dodgers going into Sunday Night Baseball last night, now are 2 games behind. I love that they didn't think to themselves, oh, look, we're so good already. They've been trying to acquire a big bat, a big free agent bat for many years now. Obviously, Shohei and Judge being the 2 biggest names on that. But they haven't had a player like this since maybe, the Barry Lamar Bonds days. Devers, three-time All-Star, 15th home run of the season hit yesterday. San Francisco's left-handed hitters combined this year have a grand total of 14 homers. That's it. He's got 15 by himself. He's slashing 272, 401, 504 this year. 272, 401, 504, which doesn't sound like much if this was a different era of baseball, but it's spectacular in this era of baseball. And they add that to an offense that entered play Sunday, ranked 14th in runs per game and 21st in home runs. It's an absolute heist from that standpoint. The only counter arguments you could make, right? Oh, well, the Giants have to take on the rest of his salary, to, you know, 9 years, $266.5 million. That's actually not that big of a negative given the Giants' situation, salary cap-wise, and how it relates to the luxury tax. And then the only other thing is there might be a ballpark issue. I will concede that, right? Devers hits a lot off that monster, which would turn into outs in San Francisco. So there is that. I will concede this point. But generally speaking, it's a complete heist. So, Kelly, I think the Red Sox trade is worse than the Orlando Magic giving up all those picks. But I think both are really eye-opening.
Are they? Can we really compare them, though? Because isn't this the Red Sox just kind of dumping Devers? Like, this is, you're a nightmare in the clubhouse. Like, we got to get rid of you.
Right, but it's what did you get back for? You got nothing back for him.
Yeah.
So, yes, I do think you can.
Okay.
I mean, from two different standpoints.
Well, that one's way worse.
I'm obviously forcing this into a discussion. Right. But I'm just saying, I get it from a Magic perspective, but you got to think that getting Bane, and by the way, I get it. The Magic were the worst team, three-point percentage. Bane's really great from three, especially stop-and-shoot threes that were the worst. He's really good at that.
Yes.
Things like 42%. I see how they think it fits, but you're the basketball guy. I mean, right now, where would you put Orlando with that trade in the East?
Okay, so I got a lot to say about this, actually, on both sides. Orlando, for a team that does nothing in free agency or trades, a team that has thrived off of, okay, we're going to do whatever we do in the draft. We're not a big market NBA team. We're not going to attract some of these big stars. We are what we are. That's basically what their ownership has been for years. For them to go out and make a move like this, I think if you're a Magic fan or an NBA fan, okay, sure, it's, hey, I got respect. You're going to try to make a legit run at winning the Eastern Conference next year. And we saw how much this team has grown up this past year. I mean, when Suggs got hurt, their season really got derailed. But if everybody remembers how good that team was before Suggs was got injured, with him, Franz, Paolo Banchero, they're great. Desmond Bane, okay, so he's a good fit from the sense that, like you said, good three-point shooter. He's a good defensive player, so he still doesn't take away from the team identity that is the Magic. I just don't know, if you were going to add somebody else, he's not a true creator or ball handler, and then you kind of add that on to already Franz and Paolo that are, okay, they kind of have to be played through. I just don't know. I don't know if it's a perfect fit. But I respect
it. It also doesn't induce a single bet for you on the Magic, I would imagine.
No.
And by the way, Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr., reportedly, they're not going anywhere. That was the other part of this. Giants, maybe there is a bet next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup are here. And PropitX is offering the best odds all playoffs long. PropitX, a peer-to-peer sports exchange available in 40 plus states, the first of its kind in the U.S. You'll be able to make your sports picks against other groups of fans rather than against sports books. Exchanges guarantee you the best odds on average by 10 to 20%. Even request your own odds. Download PropitX today with code VSIN and earn up to 200 in profit cash over your first month. PropitX, check it out. You'll thank me later. Skill Alexander, we get tweets at Beating the Book. Fairway Fred had Ortiz and Cameron Young T5 and Henley T10. Wow. By the way, I lived south of San Francisco 69 to 92. Gil, what years were you there? Raiders, Niners, Warriors, A's, all world champs. Great time to live in the Bay. I was there between 95 and 2016. 95 to 2017. Numbers guys, I made what? And by the way, I still go there every weekend if I can. Numbers guys, I made one bet pre. That's the one I just read. No, here's one. I made one bet pre-flop. Scotty, the numbers guy, says. But JJ at 22-1 on Thursday afternoon, wire to wire, there's still value just getting in as the tourney moves on, right? Well, yes, if you happen to pick the right guy in this one. But our point was, or at least my point was, how could you really discern in this tournament who was the guy to beat here? Bet of the week, he said, Scotty minus 190 Sunday morning to make top 10. Ties win. Yeah, that's a good bet. Topher Barron. It wasn't much, but during the rain delay, I decided to grab some Spawn at 16-1. Helped lessen the blow of the week. Good for you. And Wet Willie Colon. I can't wait for Kevin Durant to get traded for one first-round pick later this week while the Magic gave up four for Bane. My point exactly. And then NCI 95 Gambler. The true question about the Devers trade to San Francisco is some of us have the Giants' most wins in June, thanks to you, Gil. When you broke it down for the month, you made a great argument other than the offense not being great. Any thoughts? Yeah, I'm doing it again. And by I'm doing it again, meaning I'm picking like I break it down to like four or five teams. And then I end up picking the one that's not the I end up betting the one that's not going to get there. But the others are all in it right now. The Houston Astros are at the top of the June most wins update. They're 10-3. Then there is a complete scrum at 9. By the way, the Tigers have 8-6. But I had in that group of 9, I had the Diamondbacks and Giants as live. I still think the Diamondbacks with that really easy 9 out of last 10 games finish might be the team to beat here. Remember, it was the Astros June of last year that won it for us at 25-1 and 17-1. So there are the Giants. I don't know how that relates to June. Obviously, it's a small sample size here with 13 games left for the Giants. But absolutely over the long term. And that's the point of, you know, what we were talking about with those two trades is timing wise, the Giants Red Sox trade. So for the Giants, great. You didn't rest on your laurels of your good performance here early in the year. Your wins are already banked, right? Right now with this trade, the Giants are World Series title 22-1. This is at DraftKings. National League pennant 12-1. NL West 7-1. To make the playoffs minus 170, to win 90 games, even money. And to win 90 games, by the way, 40-1 best record, if you're interested in that. To win 90 games, the Giants, who are 41-31 right now with a 569 win percentage, will have to go 49-41 the rest of the way, which is a 544 win percentage. So not even as good of a pace as they've gotten to this point. Strength of schedule, 23rd, only 490 if you're into that kind of thing. I'm really not. 10 more games against the Dodgers, I should point out, within that, even though it's an easy-ish compared to other teams' remaining strength of schedule. If you ask me which of those one bets, if I was forced to make one of them, and I'm not forced to, I may actually make it. The one bet I would make there above all, and I just gave you six different odds for six different markets, 12-1 to win the NL pennant would be the one I would choose. Because I don't think I want to live through the balance of the season having them trying to overtake the Dodgers. And oh, by the way, the Padres and Diamondbacks are also in the mix. But over a 162-game haul and 90-plus games left, or 90 exactly for the Giants, I don't want to live through a to win the division and only get 7-1 on that. I would rather them have extra opportunity to make the playoffs with wild cards. And by the way, this trade hurts teams like the Brewers and Cardinals and the Mets and the Phillies and the Reds and everybody who's competing with the Giants for a wild card. 12-1, because once you get into the postseason in baseball, then it is the crapshoot that Billy Beane always hated. So that's the one I would play. 12-1, Giants to win the pennant. Good luck on June there to anybody who has them. Let's talk some college baseball. Matt Grissom is still in Omaha. He joins us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at Grissom on X, chilling at the Hilton in Omaha. What are you paying per night there, Matt? Just curious.
It's an asinine amount of money. It's like $900 to $1,100 per night.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Price gouging at its finest. If the College World Series isn't going on, how much do you think that room is? Just curiosity.
$130.
I was just going to say $150. Like, fantastic. No more than that.
Good job,
it
Omaha.
It is. Yeah, it is like a average Hilton Garden Inn from 2004.
Hilton Garden Inn, which I think is like third tier Hilton.
That's third tier. Solid continental breakfast in the morning, at least. No, we got the like cereal machines.
They're not. Nope.
Well, Matt, good for
you. They're not even doing that.
How has this been going so far for you? And let me, for those who have missed, because our whole network was over there in Omaha, everybody having a great old time. What has happened so far, and we're still playing baseball here into tonight, but bracket one, Coastal Carolina right now in the driver's seat. Coastal Carolina beat Arizona, then they beat Oregon State, so they have moved on in the bracket, if you will. Arizona is gone because then in the double elimination, they lost to Louisville, who had lost to Oregon State. So you have now a situation where Coastal Carolina has advanced. Oregon State is going to play Louisville to find out who plays Coastal Carolina. In bracket number two, where we're not quite as far along, UCLA beat Murray State, LSU beat Arkansas. So Arkansas goes to the loser's bracket, if you will, to take on Murray State. That game is today. And as is, by the way, the UCLA-LSU game. So let's, first of all, how have you done so far with these?
I was pretty good start, 2-1, 2-1, I think the first 2 days. And then yesterday was the Ofer. Just really thought Oregon State was going to be able to keep it tight. Coastal Carolina has kind of proved that they are the best team on that side of the bracket. The pitching performance by Jacob Morrison to get to 12-0, to get the Chanticleers team, their 25th straight win was just absolutely amazing. I've talked in the post game, and Kevin Schnall's just a fired up guy that you want to play for. He even got on the media for pronouncing, everybody was saying Chanticleers, and he said, say it with me, it's Chanticleers. So it's time to start putting respect on this team. You know, they're RPI number one now. They're not just the mid-major darling. I think they're here, and they're a real threat to win it all.
Yeah, they were the one team of the eight, now seven, that I had actually considered betting a future on and didn't. So, of course, they're going to win it. Right now, it's LSU plus 120 to win the College World Series, followed by the Chanticleers of Coastal Carolina plus 195. Everybody else 6-1 or longer. And a lot of that has to do with based on where teams are in the brackets currently. Again, Coastal has moved along. So as far as the two games today, let's start with those. Do you have a play on either Oregon State Louisville or in bracket number two, UCLA LSU?
UCLA LSU is going to be one. I'll probably just lay it with LSU. You've also got Arkansas Murray State today at 1 o'clock. And then that's another one where the line is just so out of this world. I think Arkansas is minus 500. Mm-hmm. It's been a great run for Dan Skirka's team. I think they're going to show up. You know, they plated four runs there at the end of the UCLA game to try to fight back. That ended up covering the 2.5 run line. I still think Murray State can score runs, but I think Arkansas really struggling against Cade Anderson. They're going to play a lot more loose against this Murray State team, and a pitcher that's going to go for them. Isaac Silva has a 4.07 Sierra and a high 5 ERA. So I think the Razorbacks will be able to hit the ball around. But again, I think the Racers will too. I like this game to go over. I think the last time I saw it, it was about 10.5. We've had two overs cash, albeit they both came to late game blowups by the bullpen. But I think both teams are going to be able to get runs here this morning.
Yeah, Murray State, Arkansas, the first one today. That is an elimination game. And then it is UCLA, LSU, by the way, I misspoke. Yeah, Oregon State, Louisville is in bracket one. That's tomorrow. But then UCLA, LSU, we actually had a tweet about this. What do you think about this game?
We make it minus 2.5 for LSU. That's where the score projections sit. I think that's what the run line is, too. If I had to choose one, I would probably back LSU. I think, you know, Jay Johnson in the press conference said they did just enough to beat Arkansas, and that was a very good pitching team. Jared Jones went 0-for-5 at the plate with 5 strikeouts. He stayed after practice and was taking some extra BP. So I don't think you get that type of performance out of him. I still think this LSU team is very good. You know, coming into this, I had Arkansas LSU as the 1-2. I actually think Arkansas is in a favorable position if you don't have a futures ticket yet to go ahead and back them. Their pitching depth is good enough to get there, but they're going to have to beat LSU 2 times in a row. So I think they can do it, but I also think LSU wins in a dominant fashion today against UCLA.
Okay, there you go. And
I would lay the run line.
Even slipped in Arkansas in a future. Thank you, Matt. NBA next with Raheem Palmer.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Betting on sports? Why not try the Races? First Bet lets you wager on hundreds of horse races every day from top tracks across the U.S. and around the world. Sign up at firstbet.com. That's the number one, sdbet.com. Use promo code VSiN200 to claim a 20% rebate for your first 60 days, up to $200. Head to firstbet.com today. Skill Alexander, Kelly Bidlin alongside as well. Can I repeat Matt Grissom's bets for everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Since I know you are faithfully putting them down. for VSiN.com/picks. Every host, every guest. We'll recap these at the end of the show, too. But for today's game, he's on the over in the Murray State-Arkansas game. Then he is on tonight's game, LSU -2.5 runs against UCLA. And he threw in a little future there on Arkansas at 6-1. So there you go from Matt Grissom. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Y'all are the best. Real Knicks. Isn't Chapman a gold glove third baseman? I know he's hurt, but when he comes back, Devers is right back in the same situation. And I totally agree with you that there's a ton of hits in Fenway that are outs in San Francisco. Yeah, it's the only real counter argument from the Giants standpoint of them just thinking that's a complete heist is that a lot of those shots to left will turn into outs. But as far as Chapman being a gold glove third baseman, yes. But remember, Devers' whole thing with the Red Sox was, well, you signed me to this 10-year deal for me to be a third baseman. The Giants ain't doing that. So he doesn't have that argument to fall back on here. By the way, I want to shout out Andrew from Pennsylvania and Mike from, where did Mike say he was from? Who were outside the studio before. Andrew has just posted a picture of him and Dave Ross, who he caught outside.
Oh, nice.
Couldn't have been nicer, the both of them. Hanging out outside the studio. Nathan Mallinson. Gil, if you had to compare Terry McLaurin to another wide receiver in the NFL, who would it be? I don't know. He's incomparable. I love that tweet. And then, let's see. William saying thanks to you because he had J.J. Spawn at +1180.
I'm glad. This makes me feel better. You know, like, honestly, it was not a good tournament. I'm glad that some people.
And all you said was, Spawn is legit, Lawrence is not.
That's all I said. That's all you said. I didn't bet it.
So good on you guys. Brian M., my cousin spent a year at Coastal Carolina. She said they had a whole intro thing on how to say the team name and had some hand movements that went along with it. And
I've definitely been saying it wrong for 2 years.
I have too. Mike Zills, Duke 90. The most important part of the Giants' magic trade is it makes Yankees fans happy. Can I put some numbers to that, what he's talking about right here? Devers against the Yankees, career against the Yankees. Let me get this. 31 homers in 119 career games, including 18 and 64 at Yankee Stadium. Hit a homer against them yesterday. Red Sox have won 8 of 10, and they're like, we're going to trade Devers now. By the way, if you're a Red Sox fan, you won 8 of 10, they trade Devers. Remember, of course, they traded Mookie Betts. They lost Xander Bogaerts in free agency. You've just got to be, if you're a Red Sox fan, you've just got to be beside yourself.
The Mookie Woods still.
Even though you have this great future, right? Your roster looks like it'll be great in the future, but you've just got to be bent. Yeah, you're right. The Mookie one is worse than all of them. And then finally, the last one here, Sam Ginsberg. Sons of friends of mine go to Coastal Carolina, and they also would correct us on how to pronounce the nickname, since it basically translates to Big Roosters. It's hard to feel too bad if you mispronounce the name. No mispronouncing this gentleman's name. Raheem Palmer joining us now from The Ringer, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow Raheem at one of the great Twitter handles of all time. Let me get it correct here. I am Rostradamus. That's R-A-H-S, Tradamus. How you doing, Raheem? Good to see you.
I'm good. Life is good. We live out here in Vegas. It's nice and cool early in the morning before the heat wave pops off. So life is good. I can't complain.
All right. So hold on now. You used to live in Vegas. Then you went away. You're back in Vegas now permanently.
All right. So what it was I came out here for a fight and I ended up living in the Cosmopolitan for like 7 months straight.
Wow.
I'm from Philadelphia. Born and raised, but I was like probably on one of the greatest gambling runs of all time. And I just didn't want to go home. And then I loved it out here so much that I decided to move out here.
Good for you. Well, all right. Well, we hope to see you soon then. So
we're getting him in studio at some point. Yeah, are you like 2 miles down the road now, right, Raheem? You're like right here.
Yeah, give us your address.
I'm literally around the corner from y'all. I live in between the Arts District and Fremont.
Give us your address and social security number, Raheem, while you're here. Okay. Game 5 tonight, NBA Finals. We literally, because of golf and the trades, we have not talked even about this finals yet. We're 50 minutes into the show, so shame on us. But here's the deal. Thunder are favored by 9.5. Games 1 and 2 back in OKC, it was a little more than that. The total's a little down, too. It's at 224. This, of course, coming after a Game 4 in which the Pacers were up 10 late in the third quarter. Had plenty of opportunities. That's the part of the game that was kind of overlooked. Mm-hmm. Late third quarter, they had plenty of opportunities to increase that lead. Couldn't. And we know the rest of it. And we'll get into the play-by-play of Mathurin down the stretch in a bit. But here we are now. It's a de facto best of three. What are we doing with the 9.5 spread and the 224 total tonight?
All right, so I've been telling people this, but I think this series is just so goofy. Like, I mean, you had the Thunder win a game in which they shot 3 for 16 from three. And then you had the Pacers win a game in which they had 24 turnovers. So, I mean, this is a very, very tough series. And I think, you know, the biggest thing is that Oklahoma City, they have the better defense, but Indiana has the better offense. So this one is tough for me. If I'm looking at full season numbers, I'm at Thunder minus 10.5. But I don't think you can use full season numbers for this. If I look at my just my postseason number, my post All-Star break numbers, I'm at like Indiana plus 8.5 or so. So I think if this gets to 10, you kind of got to pull it on Indiana. But I think there's some real blowout potential here. I think the biggest thing with Oklahoma City is we know that they're a juggernaut at home. You're 9-2 straight up at home, 8-3 against the spread. I think if Oklahoma City wins this, I think you need to be playing Oklahoma City alternates. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, 14.5, 15.5. I think if they win, it's probably going to be in a blowout fashion. But I think, you know, if this is a close game, Indiana, I mean, they have the offense to pull it off. They didn't pull it off the other night. But, I mean, I think ultimately a closer game favors Indiana. So I think it's a very extreme likely of outcomes.
You're absolutely right about the OKC three-point shooting. 3 of 16, 18.8%. And they still find a way to win it, let alone covering it on top of that. Do you feel like the ending of that game, and specifically, let me ask it more simply. Do you feel like the controversy about not calling the travel on SGA, a lot of push-offs by the Thunder going uncalled in that game, do you think that was overblown in game four?
Yeah, I definitely think it's overblown. At the end of the day, Indiana, they went 0 for 8 from 3 in the fourth quarter. If they go 3 for 8 from 3, they win that game. You know, it was right there. And I think Oklahoma City stole that game. Ultimately, you know, the two-man game between J-Dub and SGA, it worked out. SGA stole that game. So at the end of the day, it just, you know, you look at the defense. The defense that Dort had on Halliburton was tremendous. Even though he was, you know, pulling and pushing and everything like that, at the end of the day, you can't call everything. This is the NBA Finals, so things are going to get physical. So I think Oklahoma City, they just out-physical Indiana. And I think Indiana, they have a Miles Turner problem. I mean, he's doing his best Harrison Barnes in the 2016 Finals. I mean, right now, you're looking at a guy who's 4 for 20 from 3. Like, he's got to make some open looks. So, you know, ultimately – you know, Oklahoma City stole that. I don't want to give too much credit to the refs because I don't think it's all on the refs. When you're up 4, you know, with 3 minutes to go and you don't, I mean, you really don't score again, you can't blame the refs.
All right. So your strategy tonight is some alternate spreads on OKC. Like, you think the blowout potential is such that...
I'm not going to personally play it. I think there's two ways to play this. If you like Oklahoma City, I think you play alternates. But I think if this gets to 10.5, I'm going to be on Indiana just because I think my model has this at 8.6. That's how I'm going to approach it. But me personally, I think the most consistent thing in this series is Pascal Siakam. I think they still haven't priced his props, you know, high enough. I mean, he's probably, you know, one of the most volume scorers for Indiana. I'm playing his over 19.5 points. I've been playing his over for this entire series, and it's been getting there. So I'm going to continue to play it.
Raheem, any thoughts on this total tonight? It's open low. Now it keeps rising up. We've seen a lot of unders come through. The lack of three-point shooting. Man, there's got a lot of questions. I'm leaning towards the under tonight. I want to hear what you got to say about that, though.
So my model's at 222.5. So I would be looking under it. Actually, I just see it just went up to 225 in some places. So it just seems like the public is all over the over. But with the way that Oklahoma's City, they're not shooting a ton of threes. I mean, if you look at, you know, game one and two, they shot 30 and 36 threes. But since then, you're looking at 22 threes and 16 threes. And, you know, Indiana's doing a good job at limiting Oklahoma City Thunder's, you know, three-point frequency. You know, and that's another case for the Indiana cover. If they're not getting up threes, how can they cover a big margin outside of Indiana turnovers? So I'd be looking under here. I just think, you know, this is getting pushed up a little bit too high for, I mean, the pace isn't even that fast. So you're looking at like 99 possessions for, you know, much of these games.
Raheem, really appreciate it. Let's all enjoy game five tonight. And what, again, what I will say is if somehow the Pacers can pull this off, and I know game four was a real setback towards that, but if they can, to me, it's the greatest run of any team in any postseason in North America that we've ever seen. Raheem, appreciate it, man. Don't be a stranger.
Definitely. One thing I want to say, I think the series is going seven. I truly do. I think you could almost blindly play the team who loses tonight to win the series.
Okay.
I think you'll get a good price. It just goes seven.